Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Hump Day Val.
That's so great. Hump Day?
Hump Day Val.
And Beans. Hump Day. Why do they call it that? Because you're getting over the hump?
Getting over the hump. It's the middle of the week.
So you're over the hump to the end of the week, which tomorrow, dude, are you ready? Are you going to read the Mueller report or no?
I don't know. Maybe. I guess so. How long is it going to be again? 400 pages?
Mm-hmm.
See, once it gets past 50 pages, that's like Tracy Beans territory. I just don't do it. I can't.
Look, I get that. Trust me. You know, I never finished the mid-year exam and it came back to bite me in the ass yesterday. So,
well, you know what the hell? The thing about the Mueller report is just... Yeah, 400 pages, it's a lot and whatever. But the only reason why I would be reading the 400 pages is to prepare for what I believe is going to be spun into something that it's not.
Yeah.
So I know how to rebut it, because there's like I said before, Robert Mueller with his 2-year expedition with people who definitely wanted to find something and present something to the public, because they were presenting nonsense to the public for 2 years to validate their existence. They would not bury the greatest finds that they came across inside of the bowels of this 400 page novel. They would not bury that. That would be front page news as soon as they found it. All of this is going to be conjecture. So it's just, it's mind numbing.
I think that this is what I think is going to happen. Yeah, there'll be conjecture, but there'll also be a ton of information in there that we can use to prove other things we've thought.
True.
It's going to be an exercise to sift through this and find those things, but they are certainly there. We've done that with every Mueller filing there has been. He doesn't say that this is indicative of wrongdoing by someone else, but we do, because we know the story. So that's going to be my focus tomorrow when this thing comes out. There's mumblings I heard that Barr is going to do a press conference tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting nonetheless. And to give you complete credit to what you just said, every time there was an indictment, every time there were charges filed that came as a result of this probe, just looking into the indictment itself, we were all able to say, okay, well, what can we deduce from this? No American was involved in whatever kind of plot to interfere with an election. It definitely was not anything that had to do with the Trump campaign. When you look at the dates of all of the infractions that are being noted, it comes years before Trump even announces candidacy. So there are things that have always been there that whereas one side is using it for one thing, we can validate what it really is in reality. So I understand what you're saying. It's just, at this point, it is such an exhausting practice.
Yeah, but it's so important. Like, really. I think I tweeted this morning, we're at the beginning. We're at the end and the beginning. Okay. We're at the end of one thing and at the beginning of the next phase.
That's it. But damn, you had a big day yesterday.
Look, yesterday, okay, I'm going to tell a story that's very embarrassing. But it's okay. I'm a klutz, Frank. I'm a klutz. I fall a lot. I don't know.
Like physically?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad. It's bad. I'll be 39 in July, and I should not be doing this still at 39. I have a little bridge in my backyard that kind of connects my house to my dad's house and my mom's house. And I was really excited yesterday for several reasons, which we'll talk about in a second. And I ran over to talk to my dad about something I'd found. And I slipped on the bridge and I fell down. And I was in so much excitement that I just kind of picked myself up and ran back inside and realized that I had done some damage to myself. Significant damage, actually.
What the hell did you do?
I bruised from the top of my foot all the way basically up to the middle of my leg. And it's swollen and black and blue. And it's just, it hurts. It hurts.
What is this bridge? Is there a stream or a river between you guys?
There's like the gully that like transports the water to the lakes and stuff when it rains. And it causes a lot of mud and like water pile up. So my dad and I built like a little bridge to walk across so that we don't have to get gross in the mud. So like we walk over this little bridge and it takes us over the gully instead of having to walk through it.
Damn. So that's from the foot to the mid leg.
Yeah, it's bad.
Did you draw blood and all that?
No, I didn't draw blood, which is interesting, which means it's all like underneath.
Okay.
But it was
it's just internal damage.
It's internal injury. But all day yesterday I was in pain and I took I have like a strong ibuprofen from my surgery that I took and it didn't even put a dent in it. I'm like, wow. Okay, so yes, yesterday was a big day and I got so excited that I was like a flopping, flipping little child across the bridge in the backyard. I had a find that I did that we're going to talk about in a second. And I also, I'm blown away. I listen to Dan Bongino's show every day, every morning.
I listen pretty often as well.
You do? Yeah, he's got a great podcast. I've had my qualms with Dan Bongino in the past. But I listen every day and long story short, whatever happened, I sent some information over and he appreciated it. And it just was a crazy thing to, I usually listen the day after. It was a crazy thing to turn on the podcast and hear him say my name three times. It's three times. I thought it was amazing. I was humbled and it was really cool to have someone like him validate the work I've done.
But the work you turned up this week has been nothing short of, I mean, to say intriguing and an amazing find is selling it short. I have questions about it.
Yeah.
But it really is something else. How, because you want to know something, you strung together Bradley Manning and you strung together New York FBI, Wiener laptop, Huma Abedin, the Clintons, the OIG report, Roger Stone. You strung together so many things that have popped up. The craziest thing is the whole Bradley Manning connection. That's where I have most of my questions.
Good.
But why don't you, I don't know, put this in the nutshell that you can find that can fit it.
Yeah, this is the thing. I've had feedback from a couple different people that I'm not doing a good job of explaining things at a level that is understandable, because I have a hard time with understanding that everybody doesn't know all the details and then trying to get those details crammed into a good enough package that people get it. That's my fault. And so hopefully that when we walk through this today, that you can help clear these things up for anyone who doesn't understand them out there.
Yep.
Good. Okay. So I was digging through. If we go back to the show that we did last week about Assange, Saturday?
Yeah.
Okay. So Bradley Manning, Chelsea Manning, whatever you want to call this person now, was arrested and court-martialed back in 2010 for leaking the Iraq war stuff to WikiLeaks, who then went ahead and published 90% of it. There was a court martial, there was a court case. Obviously, Manning was convicted. During that court case, we had the text message logs between Manning and Assange come up. They were put into evidence in the case. Fast forward all these years, Assange gets indicted. The indictment is for the text messages that he had with Manning back in 2010 about the Iraq drops. They were working together to Manning asks Assange if he can help crack a password so that Manning can use a different user ID that would make it less easy to identify Manning as the person doing the leaking. Are we clear so far on that?
This is confirmed evidence, though,
yes,
that Assange was not acting solely as a publisher at this point.
No. And here's where it gets interesting.
He was actually helping with the hack.
We don't know. That's the thing. They're asserting that, but they haven't proven it.
Okay.
So they're asserting that he talked with Manning about this and then took action on it. And then in the indictment, they admit, and the affidavit, they admit they have nothing to prove that he actually did something.
Okay.
So in the affidavit, they say, nevertheless, even though we can't prove this, nevertheless, I mean, whenever you have to say nevertheless in a charging document, it's just weak. They have these three messages in these chat logs that the government has had for 9 full years, put an indictment out for Assange 2018 and arrested him now. So Manning, a week or 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, Manning was called in front of a grand jury, subpoenaed to testify in front of a grand jury about, I mean, we assume this indictment of Assange and the chat logs, right? We don't know why the grand jury wanted Manning. We just can assume it's about this Julian Assange case. Manning refuses to testify in front of the grand jury. They take the government to court to try to stop this from happening. In court, which is on Pacer, I'm reading the lawsuit and I'm seeing Manning is asserting electronic surveillance. Manning is saying that the government needs to tell the court that they're surveilling Manning in order for it to be fair. Does that make sense?
The surveillance on Manning was at what point? What years?
He is saying it's ongoing right now.
Okay. So pretty much doesn't want to go to testify before this grand jury that's been impaneled to what we're assuming has something to do with Assange in 2018.
Yes.
Okay. And doesn't want to go there. I guess wants the past to be the past at this point. And as a part of that, resisting this appearance before the grand jury is citing surveillance, past surveillance and current surveillance.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Why would that be a defense to not testify?
I believe it's the argument is that gives the government an upper hand in because remember, the grand jury, you can't be cross-examined. It's just the prosecutor. So I think what the argument is that gives the government an upper hand in asking the questions in front of the grand jury. And Manning is worried about entrapment and all kinds of other things.
So gotcha.
You understand what I mean.
So if you know that you're under surveillance, that's something that you can say, well, I'm not showing up. You have, you know, this is, I don't know.
Well, apparently not, because Manning's in jail right now.
Wait, what?
Manning is in jail right now because she refuses to testify in front of the grand jury. They put her in jail. Contempt.
Oh, boy. Okay. All right. Let's continue. Now I'm up to date.
Okay. So Manning's in jail. So I'm researching the court case. Manning files an appeal against the ruling that they made that that she must testify. So Manning's in jail right now writing this appeal. I'm reading through the appeal. And for some reason, I'm like, you know what? Let me search and see if Manning's ever been involved in any other lawsuits so that I can find some evidence of this surveillance that's being alleged. Because there's nothing to back it up. It's just a claim. They're surveilling me. But there's nothing there. Like, I don't see any, here's why I think this. Here's what I have. Like, Cheryl Atkinson had all this evidence, forensics, of being surveilled and spied on, right? I'm not seeing any of that in this case at all. So I do a search. I find a court case that Manning brought in 2016 against everyone in the government, basically. It was against the DOJ. It was against Comey. It was against McCabe. All kinds of people. And I'm reading through, and it's all, oh, they're surveilling me. They set me up in prison. This was when he was still in military prison.
Yeah, he wasn't commuted until January, or it was January. Right before it was right before Trump came in.
It was January of 2017. Yes.
Okay.
So I'm reading the lawsuit. It's basically alleging all kinds of shenanigans by the government, setting up a jailbreak, trying to entice Manning out of her cell. Just let me stop. Don't just do me a favor and don't critique what pronoun I'm using to describe this person. I've been attacked by the people who say it's a her and the people who say it's a he. I don't know what to do. I'm so lost in this case. Just stop it. Okay. Sorry. Anyway,
I just say whatever the hell comes out of my mouth. I don't even care anymore.
You have no idea how many people. It's been insane. Anyway, so I read through and I get down to the bottom of this long thing. And
from 2016.
From 2016.
Okay.
Michael Rogers, the NSA, the Department of Defense, the FBI, Comey, Clapper, Loretta Lynch, all of these people are sued in this lawsuit. It was filed 11/14/2016.
So it's a week after the election.
Week after the election. I get through all the way down to page, like, let's say 17 or so in this complaint. And it says, between October 26th and 27th, the deputy director of FBI, acting on behalf of Comey, consulted with the assistant attorney general for national security on behalf of Loretta Lynch about moving resources from CES and the WFO from Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. The discussion between McCabe and Carlin involved movement of resources from investigating and conducting surveillance on the plaintiff, Manning, and her associates, to another high-profile investigation into Huma Abedin, an aide to the presidential candidate, Secretary Hillary Clinton. And I said to myself, whoa, what? Because first of all, as I further investigated this, I realized that Manning wrote this, quote, herself. This is a pro se lawsuit, which means filed by the plaintiff, like on her own behalf. And it's written like a professional attorney wrote it. So there's something off there. And then I'm saying to myself, how in the hell do they know this?
That was my question.
We have no way to know how they know this or if it's even true. But
how does somebody that is locked up in Fort Leavenworth get this kind of information about where assets and resources are being shifted around from one investigation to another?
And if this is, and why would they put it in here like that? It was completely out of place. It was as out of place as the crimes against children and the Loretta Lynch going after the New York field office of the FBI was in the Horowitz report. It was a carrot. It's a carrot. It's basically something thrown in there to get the right people to open their eyes. That's my opinion.
Well, if you are Manning at this point and you are locked up, you're at the 7-year mark of a 35-year sentence, and somehow you have this information made available to you, somehow, don't know, that's the biggest missing piece right here. This right here is just pretty much a signal flare. It's the only thing that Manning could have possibly done to get that some kind of attention thrown in his direction.
Yes.
So it's
there's
that. It's just a matter of how the hell the information was obtained, though.
Yeah, it is. And then let's pretend knowing this. There's so many different ways this could go. Knowing this, I thought back to literally, Frank, a year ago, basically to the day that I put up the OIG bombshell pinned tweet last year about the leaks to Barrett, the spinoff OIG report that came from the mid-year exam, where McCabe testifies to Horowitz that Loretta Lynch gets on the phone with him, the Attorney General of the United States of America, gets on the phone with him and the New York field office of the FBI, threatens the New York field office of the FBI about leaking in the Eric Garner case. And then they get off the phone. That's in the OIG report, right? Then I remember that Eric Prince of Blackwater, Eric Prince, DeVos's brother, Eric Prince, intern to Dana Rohrabacher, Eric Prince, what else did he do?
Blackwater.
Blackwater. I think I said that, but yeah, Blackwater.
Well, I was listening that morning when he called in to Alex Marlowe's show on Sirius XM. And I had to go immediately find the highlight of it. And I brought it up. And that was a focus of quite a few broadcasts of mine around that late October, early November 2016 time span. It was that was an enormous interview right there. And there have been several big corroborations since then. You brought up the OIG report. I mean, I don't know how the mid-year exam can't be one of the most significant ones, even though we haven't had much elaboration since then, which I'm hoping is just a sign of people who matter in the investigation holding their cards close to their chest until it's time to throw them down.
Right.
But other than that, you're talking, you brought up in your video and your work yesterday about Roger Stone and Huma Abedin and the life insurance that she had built up herself to protect herself from the Clintons as well. Everybody has insurance against the other one. That's the only way that this entire thing stays together is the blackmail game.
Leverage.
And yeah, leverage is everything.
Yep.
So this was a very, very explosive thing for me to listen to you piece together, because I have been obsessing over what Eric Prince had told Alex Marlowe a couple of years ago. And I've just been sitting waiting with bated breath until somebody can elaborate on it and bring to light what the hell it is, because it's not a trade rumor in the MLB. We're not talking about football or professional sports here. When you make the claim that grizzled NYPD police chiefs were brought to tears after what they found, that should not go away.
I agree with you. And a lot of people relegated that to conspiracy land because it was Epstein Island. And, you know, that's all just a big conspiracy.
Yeah, it's a big conspiracy. Look at all the Epstein headlines lately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we fast forward, you know, a couple years now. We fast forward 2 years from that date. We corroborate it, basically 2 years, a year and a half. We corroborate that with the OIG report about McCabe. Then we had the MYE exam report, which was the report on the Clinton email investigation, where I think it was page 277. We get the FBI agent who's investigating the Wiener laptop note down on his note paper, crimes against children, which then again corroborates what Eric Prince says. We have Rudy Giuliani on television right around that time period in the same couple days saying there are bombshells coming. We get all this pushback from Maine Justice about the basically threatening, because Eric Prince in his interview mentioned that Maine Justice was holding the Eric Garner case over the heads of the people investigating this stuff. And a day before, Loretta Lynch calls the FBI in New York with McCabe. She swaps out the investigative team doing the work into the Eric Garner case, looking for something to prosecute the police on. It was a very high profile case at the time. A Staten Island grand jury went to trial on it and said the police did nothing wrong. The investigative team from the DOJ had just about found the same thing. Loretta Lynch yanks those people out. The reporting at the time states that these people are probably being put in because they're looking for something. And then she calls and says, listen, I'm threatening you with the you know, basically the way they testified to Horowitz was that the NYPD and I'm sorry, the New York field office, the FBI was leaking this stuff to the Wall Street Journal, that McCabe was actually leaking. Well, they didn't know any of that stuff. So that's just all a big cover. It was almost like McCabe mentioned that to protect his ass somehow from what would come down the road. Am I making that clear? Do you understand?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
My question is this. This was filed by Manning in November of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And then in January, prior to Obama leaving office, he commutes the 35-year sentence, lets him out. Me, at first, when this happened, at first blush, I'm saying, okay, well, here's the last social justice move by Obama out the door, commuting a transgender person.
Yep.
You know, for whatever reason, it looked like just a very shallow political move, one that you would expect from him. But now with this, how does this link to his commutation, do you think?
I think it links to it 100%, and here's why. So forget the confirmation of all this. So we're going to circle back around in a second to the Wiener laptop for Enhuma. But before we do that, like you said just now, 5 months to the day after the commutation is done. I think it was January 17th, 2017. Couldn't have been the 17th. I got to find it what day it was. Whatever. It was basically 5 months to the day Manning walks out, right? And then literally a month after to the day, the suit is dismissed, voluntarily pulled by Manning.
So my whole thing here is this. You are locked up in Kansas. You are serving the seventh year of your 35-year sentence. You have one play. You sue the government and everybody in it. You pretty much essentially throw a signal flare up into the air to call attention, the only play you really have. And a couple of months later, there you are having your sentence commuted as one of the final acts of the Obama presidency. What in that suit, what do you think was strong enough leverage? Where could that suit have led that it was more advantageous or more of a tactical move to get Bradley Manning out of prison?
Here's what I think. There's a couple things. Number one, some intrepid investigators noted that Carlin's last day at the in his job was the 15th of October, I believe. So if Manning is asserting that Carlin is talking to McCabe on the 26th and the 27th, we have a problem. Because he's supposed to be gone. That's number one. Number two, the mistreatment in prison, all of that nonsense, I don't think is serious enough for them to commute a sentence for someone who's done something like this. But one of the attorneys that is mentioned inside of this inside of these documents, this complaint, is actually on the Mueller team. So what that means, in my opinion, is that these people that were doing this allegedly to Manning were swampersons.
I'm just still trying to draw the lines between how one relates to the other. I understand you're talking about he's paying reference to Uma Abedin and the Clinton investigation. He pays reference there, and we know what Uma Abedin and the Clinton investigation and the whole New York scene was uncovering allegedly. I understand. So right now, from what I'm seeing, is there's just a reference to an investigation that is yielding very, very serious, not just political crimes, selling of influence, whatever the hell it is, but also humanitarian crimes. I'm just trying to figure out what the hell could have been the impetus for the commutation at that point. Because was that just like a wink, wink? I know something else. What the hell is it? And what is that thing, though?
Well, that's a good question. And that's one of the questions that are still open. Remember, the suit's filed 11/14/2016. And all of these things had happened not even a couple weeks earlier. Remember that they also sat on this information about Wiener's laptop for a month before they started moving on it. I don't know what Manning's access to television and all that was. I know that Manning was in solitary for a really long time. I'm not sure what the prison conditions were or if there was access to the internet at this point in time. And I also don't know, say your question one more time, your last question one more time.
It's what could he be alluding to in his lawsuit that would be scary enough for this to be directly related to his commutation? And for then, or after his sentence is commuted, he withdraws the lawsuit and goes along his merry way, or her merry way, whatever the hell's going on here.
Right.
Okay. That's what I'm saying, because it's not like in the lawsuit Manning is alleging, there's surveillance here and resources were being moved to another investigation that was uncovering XYZ. There's nothing there. It's almost like a wink and a nod and a hat tip.
Yeah. That's
like,
exactly right.
Do the right thing. What is he alluding to? and because it has to be something that is big enough to warrant a commutation.
I think that if there was still connection to WikiLeaks at this point in time, and given what we know, this is just speculation by me, given what we know about what WikiLeaks was doing in that time period, what the impact of it was, and what may have been coming that they didn't know about.
You mean the stuff that they had on people like Podesta?
Yeah.
And the coded language that we were seeing in these emails and other weird things that were happening?
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. Like, we don't know what these people know that they never told anyone or that they had a plan for in the future or that they used to save their own butts, right? So if Manning was somehow still getting information from WikiLeaks, because from what I read, and I need to confirm this, so don't take my word on it yet, Manning retained a security clearance throughout this and was able to do online blogging at certain points, which means there was access to a computer, and also had guests coming in to meet. So you don't know who these people are, what they're saying, et cetera, so on and so forth. But the timing of all of this, and I guess maybe this was like the almost dead man switch for Manning. You keep me in here, I'm going to keep going with this lawsuit, whatever I'm going to drop, blah, blah, blah. Or so-and-so on the outside is going to do A, B, C, or D. And what's interesting here is this little tidbit. Manning petitions the government to assign a court-appointed attorney for the case. And in the papers states that it's not a financial need. I have the resources financially to be able to provide an attorney for this, but it's for other reasons in terms of the classified information and some other things that they're requiring a government appointed attorney, like a court appointed lawyer. That I found, where is all this money coming from? Who is funding that?
I don't know. You know what this reminds me of?
What?
This reminds me of in a certain way. There are certain things that are different fundamentally here, but as far as the quid pro quo that seems to be going on here with the lawsuit, the commutation, the withdrawal of the lawsuit, and all the questions that surround what the hell kind of an exchange or a transaction this might have been, it reminds me so much of the Bo Bergdahl trade.
Oh.
And the five Taliban generals.
Wow.
To cover up the Stinger missiles that were being moved around in Libya, and Chris Stevens and Benghazi. It reminds me so much of that.
You got to wonder how many times this has happened.
Absolutely. I mean, Bo Bergdahl was a traitor, 100%. Not worth five Taliban generals. But if the Taliban have Stinger missiles as evidence that our State Department was moving weapons unauthorized by Congress. You want to know the other thing about that whole situation there is that the arms dealer that was pretty much moving all this stuff around on behalf of the State Department was a guy named Mark Turi. You ever hear of him?
No.
Mark Turi, T-U-R-I, and he was represented in guess who represents him legally?
Oh boy, Perkins Coie.
Yep.
How did I know? It's amazing.
Oh, there's so much. There's so much.
Oh my lord!
All this reminds me of that. It's a little bit different, you know. Manning, like I said on Saturday with you, you can the opinions you have on Manning and what Manning did with the. With the releasing of all this and working with WikiLeaks to expose whatever the motives were, that is up for whatever debate you want to have. The thing here is that Manning or anybody in Manning's position has to make a personal choice. Okay, well, if I'm going to do what I perceive to be is the right thing, I have to break the law to do it. Mm. And it is you can't go around the idea that the law wasn't broken or that the protocols of the protocols that you agreed to obeying when you went to work for your employer, which is the United States government, have been broken and you're in breach of all those agreements and personal liability is now on you for what you felt, may have felt, is the right thing to do. That is a moral and ethical debate people can have. Outside of the legal debate, there is none. A law was broken. But in Bo Bergdahl's case, that's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about the exposing of whatever. That's why I mean that there's fundamental differences.
Yeah, but
as far as the quid pro quo cloud of suspicion, that's something else.
And I had you're right about that, because it's fundamentally sort of the same thing, like shut this person up and give them what they want, because that it's just like what Comey did with Assange. Basically, well, not really. Actually, I'm wrong. But basically, he sacrificed. What is more important? Is it more important that we hide the real origins of this information that
it is like it. You were right. That's another thing, the Comey and Assange thing.
Yeah.
The blocking of Assange coming in when there was an immunity deal set up is another example. The fundamentals of the story might be a little bit different, but it's another example of people on the inside who are personally connected to nefarious dealings that are making decisions on who is prosecuted, what is justice, what is the law, and what is this middle muddle gray area that we can be a little bit more, I don't know, we can interpret it in whatever kind of way that suits our personal and political needs. That is going on constantly. There is actually no standard of law here. There's no standard practice anymore. That is the common thread throughout all these instances, whether it be Bergdahl or Manning or the Assange immunity deal. It is all people who are connected intimately to the ongoings of government that should probably not be going on. And that's it. They're all shifting blame around, and they're shifting focus in some kind of advantageous way. And that's the common thread.
Yeah. And it's gross. I mean, it's necessary sometimes, I'd assume, right? But it's still disgusting. Makes me sick, kind of, actually. Can't we just do the right thing? I think we're doing the right thing now, though, I'll be honest. I mean, yesterday, honestly, outside of the fact that I was mentioned in it so amazingly, gosh, I don't think I'll ever get over it.
That was great.
It was really amazing. I'm like a little fangirl. Outside of that, the podcast itself was really good, because I've been on the fence about Dana Buente for a really long time, or Buente, however you say it, for a really long time. Dan's podcast yesterday goes through some scenarios about Dana Buente and what he could possibly have been doing, why Trump kept him and all this stuff. And I provided a lot of that information, or some of it anyway. And it kind of, like, I've been having some qualms with some people. Dana Buente was one of the people that signed off on the FISA warrant, is now general counsel for the FBI, was one of three people that was not let go by Trump, and connects into the Russia investigation, not so much in the way that Dan talked about it yesterday with Julian Assange. I'm going to take it in a different direction right now. In the middle of the mid-year exam, in the middle of the election, Dana Buente was responsible for grabbing the original Guccifer from Romania, extraditing him over here to the United States, and having him cop to a plea deal, and then having him go on the record saying nobody else accessed Clinton's server, and then sending him back to Romania to finish out his prison sentence there. And there's a lot more involved in that story that I don't know that we'll get into today. But this was right in the midst of when Mifsud was telling Papadopoulos that Russia had Hillary Clinton's emails. So let me just set it up for you, and then you can ask me any questions if you have them. Basically, there's reporting in the news. There's a couple of reporters that go over to Romania and meet with Guccifer One and interview him. They sit on the interview for a couple months until May, I believe. In May, they start talking to the press starts talking, and Judge Napolitano, this was right before he was kind of excommunicated from Fox. Judge Napolitano comes out and says that the Russians are right now struggling with what they're going to do with Hillary Clinton's emails, and reports that Guccifer One says that they have them. This is at the same time as Guccifer One is here with Dana Buente, copping a plea deal to hacking Sidney Blumenthal's emails. Do I make sense so far?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I'm looking for my thread so I can kind of fill it up a little bit better for you guys as we go along. But basically, Judge Knapp comes out and says that, then Laura Ingraham comes out and has an article on it, and then all of a sudden, everybody goes away. Never talked about it again. This is happening at the same time as Mifsud is going up to Papadopoulos and saying, hey, by the way, Russians have Hillary Clinton's emails. A week later, Guccifer 2 shows up all of a sudden. A Romanian hacker. It's almost like they interviewed Guccifer 1 to figure out how he was who he was and then cloned him to create Guccifer 2. And Guccifer 2 is the cornerstone of all of this.
Right.
So I know that's complicated and I'm probably not doing a really good job of explaining it. But
well, the creation of the Guccifer 2 nonsense is akin to the CrowdStrike.
Yes. And CrowdStrike, we need to look. There's things going on there. We need to pay attention to CrowdStrike in the coming days.
Telling you, the cornerstones of this investigation are still up and they're firm.
The
cornerstones of this theory for the deep state are still up and they're firm. As long as they can always fall back on Russia hacking the DNC, then everything that came afterwards is at least in a public opinion sense could be legitimized. As long as that is something that is commonly held as fact, that the Russians were the ones who hacked the DNC, then how can you really ever blame anybody for going out there and investigating and trying to get to the bottom of it and being suspicious of the opposing political party, who obviously could stand to benefit from such an exposure? Even though they have not been able to prove that one vote was changed, anything, and I'm not giving them credit for anything. I know it's all bunk. I'm just saying that if this is something we continue to hold in common, at least in an official sense, we're not going to make any headway with this.
Who's now? You can come with this as the people that are negative Nancys, or you can come with this as the people who see it in a different way. Who's the one person on this planet who can verify that the Russians hacked the DNC and John Podesta?
Julian Assange or the Russians?
Julian Assange. Yep.
Is he in the country yet?
Not as reported publicly, no. But it's either, depending on which side of the fence you sit, the naysayer fence where nothing's going to change, or the side of the fence where things are going to be taken care of. It's either they've got him here so he can tell the truth once and for all, or they've got him here to cover it up. And I seemingly tend to lean towards the expose it once and for all. Because like I said, Barr reaffirms Mueller's conclusion about the Russians in his summary report. Interestingly, what if he's doing that to completely discredit the entire thing later?
Could be.
And that's the way
could be. It very well could be. I mean, like we said before, everything has to be squeaky clean. If we need to wait for certain things to develop, although we're knocking on May's door now. It's now May of 2019. Then you have
still got 2 weeks.
Yeah, still do.
Listen,
but still.
Don't worry about May, June, July anymore. Like, I know that I have a feeling we're going to get May is going to be the Pfizer report. Maybe early June. Maybe. And then I think as soon as that happens, the whole rest of this thing comes tumbling down. I think that I'm anxious to see who else declares that they're running for president. Because I have this sinking feeling. Not even sinking. I have a feeling that these people are going to start declaring they're running for office to evade any targeting in a catch-22, the likes of which I've, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, Comey, I'm running for president. Oh, how interesting, you know?
Yeah, it's also going to be interesting to see if the UK and Sweden try to screw up the U.S. extradition of Assange.
It will be, because, I mean, there's a calling card they've got in their back pocket now with all the crap going on over there. And, yeah. You, not to change up the topic too much, but I got to say, your show last night was really fantastic. I got to listen to a good portion of it, and I think it was last night that you... Was it last night you played the clips of the Fox News host cutting off...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It was that the guy with the bad hair. What's his name?
Cavuto?
Yeah, that's him. He's got the Eddie Munster hair.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't look real.
No, not only that, but Frank, I posted about that immediately because I was listening. That was like the first live feed I found. Everyone yells at me all the time, why do you still listen to Fox News? Because it's my job. I have to listen to all these people so I can see what the narrative is. And you know what I mean?
Oh, that was sick. I mean, they like I said last night, they literally used the Looney Tunes hook.
It's horrible.
Cavuto went after that Donahue guy, but Shep Smith, he had two rounds, two people that he yanked off for talking about, and that's the real thing here that gets me when I think about where all of this initial reporting on the fire at Notre Dame really goes. I mean, what does it really tell you about all of this stuff? Because it's like, you know, you have Neil Cavuto, who's up there telling people, shaming, giving them the hook, get the hell off the air, whatever the hell it is. And what are they doing? They're trying to actually contextualize the story. So if you are a part of a news network and you're covering an incident in which there is so little information on out there, where everybody that is reporting on even the time, there's such great fluctuation in the times of the fire starting, where there is also a first alarm that went off 23 minutes before the actual fire began, and they went to go check up on it, and there was no fire there. Then the second time, there was a full-fledged fire at the highest reaches of the church. And then you have someone like Neil Cavuto, and I ask myself, does he actually really want to learn something new?
No,
he doesn't. They don't want to hear anybody that actually wants to contextualize the stories that they're reporting on for his audience.
I don't understand, Frank, what was so bad about the world learning that this isn't the first attack on a Catholic church in France in the past couple weeks.
No, and there's over 1,000 of those instances last year.
It's like they don't, it's really sick and the rude, and I heard him in your clip trying to explain, I'm not making this up, this is happening. Completely hung up on. It was disgusting, Frank. Disgusting.
So you call yourself a journalist and you call yourself, you're a reporter, you're trying to put together the news, but you refuse to even accept the idea that this might be part of a greater problem, even if it turns out becoming or being confirmed as a freak accident. You can't even, and that's the other thing. The church has not even stopped. He hadn't even completed its burn, and they have ruled out arson.
I know. This is Cavuto.
And as they tell you, they ruled out arson. They're declaring that there's going to be a full, long, and thorough investigation. So wait a second. You're going to go into a long, thorough investigation? Already knowing that there was no way, shape, or form that this could have ever been malicious.
It's, it's wherein I don't, I mean, I the only positive out of this for me is that so many people were pissed about that.
Well, they see. They. I think more people are starting to see what Voltaire said. If you want to see who rules over you, all you have to do is look to what and who you are not allowed to criticize.
Yeah.
And what I brought up on my Monday night show was the whole idea about sanctuary cities, and what the word concept of sanctuary really is now. Who and what is being actually granted sanctuary? And who are they being protected from? They're being protected from those who actually deserve the sanctuary, those who want to live in Western civilization and have that tradition and that culture and those liberties preserved. And meanwhile, this political gamble that has taken the form in many ways, but has mainly taken shape in the form of this migrant crisis and this this international refugee resettlement program that's been going on, that they had to have known was going to create a really horrible clash of cultures. It is so far down the rabbit hole now with all this. We are so far down Schitt's Creek that you cannot. At first, you wanted to tell people, don't worry, nothing's going to happen. Socialism is encouraging our native populations not to have families anymore. We're dying out. We need the population help. Then you have a couple of decades of market testing, and you realize that violence is going through the roof, political and religious persecution is going through the roof. Now they have all of their media that is coalescing around a new narrative. Nothing's going on. This is nonsense. There's nothing to see here. When really now the reason why they're doing it is not to propose new policy, but to really just try to avoid what would be a very violent uprising from the imported population. That is why that nobody's trying to break up no-go zones and really try to deport bad factions of that are living in London, or the Asian gangs that they keep reporting in the UK that are running, these child grooming operations that are slowly being uncovered that have been ignored for decades. There is so much going on here that law enforcement and the media are now covering up because they do not want to see society completely go up in flames or up in an acid attack.
Do you think that that's why they're covering it up, or do you think they're covering it up because they want it to be successful?
They want to be successful.
The completion of this change, this fundamental change that's going on, and the whatever comes with it.
There's no way that it could be reversed at this point, Tracy, unless I can't say it. I mean, there has to be mass deportations and resettlement, and actually put it, first of all of the Western intelligence operations that actually destabilized these people's real homes, that then warranted the reason to go and replace the population and bring people in and try whatever the hell it is. So you think about the sick scheme that's going on here. Western intelligence destroys Africa and the Middle East, and then they take all the people who have been displaced and they put them into right in the middle of the cultural heart of a place that they could never fit into and did not choose to be a part of. There's not going to be any assimilation. So it's nothing to think about here. There is no going back on it unless they do something that is going to be so far beyond the pale from what liberal Europe is ready to accept, and that is mass deportation and breaking up of ghettos and all this stuff, and maybe putting a little bit more time into helping people stay home and not bombing their homes. And it's really sick, because the one group of people that have not had any say in all this is the citizens
who live in the places where this is happening.
Whether they are liberal, conservative, libertarian, anarchist, the citizens never had a choice. All we have now is the responsibility, I guess, to fight with each other. That's it. We all, you, me, all the people in France and Germany and Belgium, all the little people are doing now. They have been saddled with the responsibility of sifting through what is racist and what is compassionate and what is this and that. That's what we're trying to go through and pick through the political correctness nonsense. Whereas the people who perpetrated this don't give a damn. They never did, because the writing was on the wall from the beginning. So I don't know if anybody's going to have the balls to do what must be done. But I'll tell you one thing: ignoring the trends, behavioral trends in Europe and the rest of the world, is not going to make anything better. I don't care how much money you can raise on a dime to rebuild one church or another church. You can't keep rebuilding churches and calling it progress.
I feel you. I'm hitting the pause button real quick. Frank, I always had one question about all of this that's puzzled me immensely.
Uh-huh.
How are there so many of them and so few of us?
Who? What are you talking about, them?
People that are migrating to other countries and then destroying them.
H- How there's so many? Well,
like how are there so many of them and so few of us? Oh no! Stop it!
What?
My clip was playing. Sorry. Go ahead.
How? Well, I don't know. I don't know how to really answer that outside of. I mean, there is the obvious. The obvious is that socialism does not. You know, it kills populations. There are less and less Greeks every year. There are less and less Swedes in the world every year. You need a population. You need growth, actually, for a country to maintain its population. Every woman, every couple needs to produce 2.1 children per household just to be able to replace itself. And I don't know what it is, but in the Western world, whether you combine the ideas of environmentalism, where everybody doesn't want to have, they're trying to say don't have as many kids, it's not good for the environment, whether it's feminism, making young girls chase dead-end careers for the rest of their lives and then, you know, finally going to a sperm bank at 45 and then putting a kid into foster care for 18 years. That's motherhood now in a progressive world. And then so you look at all these contributing factors. And the fact that socialism itself really does not put a very high value on the act of building a family, leaving behind a legacy, building strong communities and all that. It's about just having whatever is out there rationed out to everyone. You are entitled to certain things. There's no reason to work. There's no reason to pass anything on. It's just something that subtly seeps into the mentality of the culture that adopts these ways of thinking. Wow. And what you have here is whereas you need 2.1 children to replace a population, go look at the birth rates in all throughout Europe. Greece, 1.3. You know, that's one on the lower end, but barely anybody's doing it. So when you start bringing in people from Yemen who produce at a clip of 4.1, it only takes 20 years.
You're right. Yeah. No, I'm glad you explained that. Like, this is your deal. This is like your thing. I like it. And I think everyone's going to appreciate it. But I will tell you one person who's not happy with socialism anymore, Frank.
Who?
I don't know how many bad words are in this little, probably a lot of them. I wonder if we should play this. Cardi B.
Oh, no.
Cardi B went on a rant talking about
female Bill Cosby.
Yeah. I did a whole big thread on her. My husband was like, don't do that. She'll come for you.
Yeah,
she probably
she'll come
would.
For you.
She probably
whatever.
Would. She did. OK, I'm going to say, Jerry, don't get mad at me, but I'm going to do this and you're going to need to go back and beep it out. Here we go.
Government is taking 40% of my taxes. And Uncle Sam, I want to know what you're doing with my tax money, because you know what I'm saying? Like when you donate to a kid from a foreign country, they give you updates of.
I can't. I just became dumber.
You don't want to hear the rest? Come on, it's
go
good.
Ahead. Go ahead, because you know here's the other thing you have to understand. This is a low functioning creature here that is only looking at her money going somewhere and she wants to get hers. And you know what? In that respect, it is her money. I'm glad she's having this revelation. But after she made this response, she has gone on the attack for every other blind reason. She doesn't understand how one stance contradicts another.
No.
Like most people who are swept up in this herd mentality. So let's keep listening to the broken clock being right once a day.
Yeah, and then you know right after this she said she supports Sanders for president. So that's funny.
She's an idiot.
She's rich. We're going to end the show with this, Frank, and let you fester on it the rest of the day. Here we go.
What they doing with your donation? I want to know what you're doing with my tax money, because I'm from New York and the streets is always dirty. We was voted the dirtiest city in America. What is y'all doing? There's still rats on the damn trains. I know y'all not spending it in no damn prison, because y'all be giving niggas like two underwears, one jumpsuit for like 5 months. So what is y'all niggas doing with my money? What is y'all doing with my money? I want to know. I want receipts. I want everything. I want to know what y'all niggas doing with my money. What is y'all niggas doing with my money? money. Uncle Sam, I want to know what the f*** doing with my money.
What do you want me to say? That I don't want to kill myself right now? You want me to tell you that I want to live for the rest of the day?
How on earth did we get here? How is this somebody who has millions of dollars?
I don't know.
I mean, I don't Frank, know. What we, is we, happening?
We went from Patrick Henry to Cardi B.
Oh my gosh.
We went from Patrick Henry to Cardi B.
She's, what is that? I lost you. The Cardi B crazies came for you, Frank. You're gone. He couldn't take it anymore. It blew up. It blew up. He's going to call me back. Or maybe not. Maybe we've lost Frank for the rest of the day. Maybe we've lost him. Maybe that's the end of the show right there. Frank couldn't take Cardi B, and he's gone. Yeah, he's gone. All right, guys, listen. That was the Dark Delight podcast with Frank and Beans. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, or RadioInfluence.com.
This is a cannabis podcast. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
Let's talk about the origin of 420. Now, what did you read as the origin of 420? I think it all comes back to pretty much those kids in California, right?
Yeah, there was a group of kids in California, the Waldo brothers, I think they called themselves, and they would meet up at 420 every day and smoke.
And get blazed.
It was the 70s. And then I think from there, there's been a lot of other kind of cultural things that bring on 420. I read something that it was a police code for smoking marijuana at some point. I don't know how true that is. You know, it's code 420. Somebody's smoking marijuana somewhere. And then it like how everything else takes off. It took off in the movies, music. And it's just, I think because it's been such an underground concept for so long, it'll be interesting to see how 420 changes in a legal culture.
I don't know if it's going to change at all.
Yeah, I don't know.
Does anybody own it?
No.
Nobody owns 420.
Mm-mm.
Is that even possible?
I don't think you can. I don't think so. I don't know how you would trademark that like Santa owns Christmas, you know, Jesus, Santa Christmas. I don't know how you would own 420, how anybody can claim the origins of that. I think it's just sort of culturally an opportunity to kind of bring awareness to that. But I do think you'll see it become more mainstream in these legal states, even in medical states. I mean, people in Florida, 420, it's a thing. They are excited.
It's a thing.
They're
excited,
especially it's on a Saturday this year, too.
The Cannabis Podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.